Welcome to the wrestling podcast that's not just for wrestling fans. This is Smark and Friends on the Two Finger Guns Club Network. My name is Zach and I'll be your host. I learned a new word this week, and it's a word that I should have had in my vocabulary for ages. Check this out. Nanar. It's a French word that's used to describe films that are so bad it's good. It's my favorite genre of film that I didn't even know was a genre. And I learned this while I was live tweeting a film called Death from Above, an action horror flick starring Kurt Angle, Psycho Sid, and James Storm. Thank you to Twitter's at Tuesday the 10th for teaching me this term. And we are reviewing this very film on today's episode. And I invited return guests, Haley and Kate from the Time Warp Radio podcast, to review it with me. I always have a blast chatting with these two, so it was a no-brainer to invite them back to the show. Time Warp Radio is a minute-by-minute Rocky Horror podcast that has recently wrapped up, but have no fear, Katie and Haley are still working together and the project is still moving forward, and we're going to talk a little bit about what that entails, and we're also going to review Death from Above in detail right after these messages.
Hey there, ladies and gentlemen, and everything in between, and welcome to the commercial. This is your friendly neighborhood Rocket Man exhorting you, if you have the time and you find yourself in need of something to do, to please come back and visit me for Rocket Man Explorer Season 1. Or, if you just have a modicum of time, you can always go and follow us at Instagram and Twitter at RocketManTFGC. Just stay tuned for more Rocket Man Explores action, because I will be back. Now back to your regularly scheduled and much better programming of Smark and Friends. Enjoy!
We are back, and more importantly, my guests are back. Return guests and true friends of the show, the hosts of Time Warp Radio, and most recently, its spin-off podcast, Shock Treat Minute. Damn clever name, by the way. Haley Mervini, Katie Tominey, thanks for coming back to Smark and Friends.
Hi!
Zach, you literally give the most flattering introductions that, like, I feel my cheeks are so red right now. Wow.
And speaking of you and your show, I don't know if you listened to our little sneak peek of our intro for Shock Treat Minute, but we threw in a little something for you.
I haven't got around to watching it, listening to it yet, and now I'm embarrassed.
No, it's okay.
No, when you listen to it, now you'll know that there was like an Easter egg for you specifically.
Oh, I'm rubbing my hands together. I'm going to check it out immediately after this recording.
Yeah, oh. This is a great teaser anyway, so you should just go listen to it. And then
absolutely. I'm so glad to have you back. Like, I always love recording with you both. It's always a lot of fun. And, like, again, we're 1 minute and 40 seconds into this, and already I'm like, again, I'm smiling too. My cheeks are hurting.
Yeah, the feeling is mutual. We love talking with you. We loved having you on our show as well.
Oh my
gosh, got to
yes.
Give you the Smark and Friends treatment reverse Uno style, and made you watch a couple of Eddie-themed wrestling matches, and that was so much fun. Oh my gosh, I loved the watch-along.
Yeah, it's surprising how much Eddie kind of pops into the wrestling world one way or the other.
I feel again, like it's a vibe they give off.
Yeah, definitely. Just the, I don't know, the bombastic nature of Eddie. He just, like, beckons to the wrestling
yes.
world.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
Adam Lambert has still not shown up to WWE TV as far
damn.
As I know, though. So
we'll keep an eye out. We have Google alerts set up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we will keep each other posted. Absolutely. Otherwise, you know, like, how are you guys holding up these days? Like, you know, I always feel like that's a bit of a redundant question because, you know, like, what else is new for any given person on this earth right now? But, you know, how you doing?
Things are looking up. As California is starting to be better with the vaccine rollout.
Yes.
And we're really excited that it's like I can see a return to shadow casting and a return to like indoor Rocky Horror very soon. Like that's, I want it to happen by Halloween. I hope we can do like Rocky Horror screenings with the full shadow cast, full shebang. People don't have to wear masks.
Well, and not only that, but I am fully vaccinated and I have returned to my side job at the happiest place on earth. So it's been a really exciting past month for me.
Yes. And so then since we haven't been doing Rocky Horror in person, Katie and I have been hosting the drive-ins that our art house cinema, the Frida, has been putting on, and it's the only reoccurring screening of Rocky Horror in Southern California right now, mm-hmm. which just feels like I can't believe
that's us.
Yeah, it's been cool. I just so much fun.
A little bit of a brag for a moment.
You need to come out now doubly because like we're doing fun pre-shows now and stuff.
Absolutely. You know, once the borders are open, like I just want to like get out of Montreal and just mm-hmm. visit other places. I love this city mm-hmm. and I would like to see it a little more, but man, do I want to just get away from the boundaries of my, the threshold of my door and just be elsewhere for a little bit.
Same. We want to, yeah. well, we want to come visit you too out.
Please do. I mean, north. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm hoping for the same thing. Like, that'd be so great if by October, the city, the art scene was running again and Rocky mm-hmm. Horror, the main line's going and just, with a little luck, maybe we'll see the end of this by the end of the year, you know?
Yes.
We're oh keeping my gosh. Our fingers crossed.
Oh. For real.
Yeah.
And then just as like a podcasting thing, like we really happily wrapped up our first season covering Rocky Horror. So now we.
Yeah, I was about to. Certainly about to ask about that. Like, you know, when I first talked to you, you're only a few episodes into to Time Warp Radio, you know, your minute by minute Rocky Horror podcast. But now you've wrapped up the last few minutes of the show of the movie with your show. How you feeling
still
saying goodbye to that first
emotional
wave?
Emotional about it. Oh, man.
Yeah, very yeah. emotional. Haley surprised me with, like, a little, like, cute thing at the end of our last recording session, and I was like, what are these wetness on my face? I don't...
what is the salty really, discharge?
Right? I'm like, what is happening to me? I don't know what's
my
going
cheeks
on.
Are leaking. My cheeks are sweating profusely.
too funny. So like wait, it was a gift of some sort?
No, she just said really nice things. And I was like, wow, hi, look, we're friends.
I think it ended up being a much bigger project than we realized it was going to be when we undertook it. And mm-hmm. in that way, it's also been hugely rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was just like, you know, the way the movie ends, you want to watch the movie again. Like you don't want, it plays off into blackness and it redoes an instrumental of the Time Warp. Mm-hmm. Which really encourages folks to get up and do the Time Warp again. And it made me want to, like, go back and reanalyze the movie all over again because I feel like there's always other things to, like, pick up on. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited that, like, I want to continue studying it. And Shock Treatment will be really, really fun.
So fun.
But we're also going to, like, still want to do character analysis and stuff on all of them because there's still so much to talk about with them.
Yeah.
You know? Like, especially wrapping it up and seeing the whole completed work with a different perspective. There's, like, oh my gosh, you could choose your own ending on...
Like, all of the characters. Yeah.
How you want Brad to end up, how you want Magenta to end up, like...
It's crazy.
I really hope there is a choose-your-own-adventure book of the Rocky Horror Picture Show out there. Like, this seems like it's just ripe for merchandising.
I mean, we're doing it in audio format on our Patreon, so...
A beauty. Beautiful.
Yes.
But again, as you mentioned, the train doesn't stop. You're moving on to a new film. You're going to be discussing yeah. Shock Treatment. Tell us a little bit about this because, like, I don't know too much about Shock Treatment. and we'll get to how I was kind of unraveled into the fandom a little bit more. But, like, I understand yeah. that. Yeah. I understand that Shock Treatment will be very much in the same spirit as Time Warp Radio.
Absolutely. If it's Katie and I, it can't be anything else. We couldn't be any different if we tried.
So Shock Treatment is the Rocky Horror sequel / equal, and we call it that because technically it's the sequel to Rocky Horror, but it really has kind of nothing to do with Rocky Horror. There is Brad and Janet in the film, but they're not played by the same people. It's just kind of like a totally, like, alternate universe type
thing.
But
while she says this, the actors who play Riff Raff, Magenta, and Columbia are now playing totally different characters.
Brilliant.
But it's like, I don't understand. Are they supposed to be Riff Raff and Magenta, or are they... So that's something we're going to try and, like, figure out. And it's also... In the way that it's a sequel, it's the same production team, the same director, same
writer.
Writer, same musical arrangementer.
That's a word for sure, definitely.
I'm sure that's a vocabulary.
And you know, Sue Blaine comes back and does all the costumes. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a continuation of an artistic vision. Is it a continuation of Rocky Horror? Maybe.
We're going to find out.
We'll try.
Well, I'm excited to give it a listen. Just like a quick question about Shock Treatment. Cause like,
yes.
Like back when we first crossed paths with each other, I had never heard of the film. But I watched, you sent me the trailer this afternoon. I finally got around to watching it. And now I am very eager to see this film. Am I just naive having never heard of this film, or is this like the Rocky community's best kept secret?
Yes. So yeah? it was released in 81 and it like, absolutely totally bombed in the box office, like even worse than Rocky did. And the internet says that it made a cult revival, but that cult revival is literally just Rocky fans being like, Richard O'Brien wrote another movie, and being really into it. Like it's not super well known at all. The music in it is absolutely fantastic, and I will give it that.
I agree.
Other than that, it is a movie that was made.
Well, okay, I think there is secret genius to it.
Yes.
Because it predicts kind of Americans' obsession with reality TV.
Okay.
And it also... Okay, so like if we want to get meta...
Yes, please.
So part of why Shock Treatment didn't necessarily take off is because the fans in 81 were like, they're trying to market to me, man. This is bullshit, man. I don't want to take your corporate bullshit, man. You can't mass produce what you did for Rocky Horror. Like, that was lightning in a bottle. You couldn't recreate that if you tried, which is true. That is an accurate statement.
Because they did try and it didn't work.
Yes. And it's in... I just think that this whole team, this whole creative team is, they're geniuses because they created a work of film that is recreated on a weekly basis. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's so many elements to Shock Treatment that are like big and overproduced and like, how would you ever get that many people to shadowcast and like, how would you get these props and how would you recreate these costumes? Some of these costumes are like, oh my gosh. You think Columbia's jacket is hard to recreate? There are a couple of costumes in Shock Treatment that are like, oh, and why? I don't want to make that. Like, but I think it's the production team being like, you thought Rocky Horror was so easy, then let's see who's up for the challenge.
Right.
Let's, like, put them to the test. If you want to really, like, if you were bored by Rocky Horror, like, here's something that you'll really get to work on.
The leveled up version for production value.
Yes.
Well, I am very excited to check out Shock Treatment. And my last question about the podcast is, when am I going to be able to do so?
So we premiere on April 28th. Sweet. And... we're just continuing our Wednesday. We were watching Rocky on Wednesdays, but now on Wednesdays we watch Shocky.
Love it.
Yeah, we're really excited to talk about it. It's going to be just, you know, when I watched it the first time, Katie was like, we have to sit down, we have to watch it. I wasn't feeling it, but we watched it anyway, and the whole time through, I had the most similar experience to the first time I watched Rocky Horror as any other movie I've watched since Rocky Horror, because it really does get the, like, absurd and the surreal and the, like, nightmarishness, like, dream landscape that you can believe all of the things are happening, but you kind of hope that they aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's so good. I liked it a lot. I got sold on it. I was an anti-fan that was like, no, I'll never watch Shock Treatment. I don't need to see it. I love Rocky Horror. The end. But no, I ended up really enjoying it.
Fair enough. Well, once again, I'm very excited. The end of April cannot come soon enough.
You're so sweet. Oh,
I'm excited. I'm an excited person. What can I say? but as for Smark and Friends today, like the last time I had you on the show, you joined us for a watch along, which was our first like core format of the podcast. This time we're exploring another format that we do, which is our film reviews, and our films often feature professional wrestlers in starring or supporting roles. And today we're talking about Death from Above 2012. directed by Bruce Culler, starring pro wrestlers Kurt Angle, James Storm, and Psycho Sid, with there's a whole litany of wrestling cameos in this whole movie. I gave you a little detail about this film, like, over the weekend, and, you know, I had very little to go on myself. I knew very little, other than there were wrestlers and druids. So aside from wrestlers and druids, did you have any other expectations about this film?
I didn't until the opening credits and it said featuring Anti-Flag. And I was like, yes! Oh, great. Anti-Flag's in this movie.
Right?
No, I quote, this was what Katie said. Oh, just who I want to see. Anti-Flag.
Like, I remember
so we
my...
we were just waiting in anticipation the whole time. Like, when is Anti-Flag going to even show up?
Did you know any of the wrestlers who were involved by name?
Not by name, but by face. Because, like...
Okay.
I don't remember who it was, but he popped up on screen and I go... That's a guy that I've seen before.
the guy that was the sheriff. He's not a wrestler, but he was the guy that I kept going every time he came on screen. Oh, that guy.
Yeah, he's not a wrestler, but that's Tom Savini. But yes. funny enough, like little trivia, like he's like a special effects artist by trade. And recently he did kind of like segue into the wrestling world. He designed the mask for this daunting character called the Fiend. Very theatrical, monstrous character. Kind of really cool to see. And you can tell that like someone who knows their craft in the special effects trade really worked on that.
Ooh.
Yeah. But anyway, the film itself, like, just before the credits, we get a little prologue happening. I don't know, they don't say what year, but we have to assume this was from, like, a previous century. We see, like, a monk or a cleric of some sort running through the forest.
Wow, if they dated it, that would have been so much...
It would have, like...
Simple clarification. Title card. Just one... It's 1618.
Okay, yeah.
Now we know.
1973.
Right.
Somewhere in the middle, like 1790 something, like anything there. Any kind of caption card would have been ideal. You know, he runs into the cabin. He has like a couple medallions that he gives to another, like his posse of religious folk. They all run away. And the dude who was there.
One of them doesn't take the medallion.
He like reaches for it and then he goes, no.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that guy.
We literally wrote it down in our notes. We were like, why?
We rewound it and watched it again because we were like, did he just fake him out? And that's why he's like, take it, take it.
So I guess that explains why it gets found where it's found later on in the film. But I did miss that because I was more distracted by like that hog squealing sound that is yes. portraying this monster. It's like the cleric dude. He's just like sitting there. He's praying that he hears the sound. He looks up. Brilliant scream, by the way. Like, he has one of the best screams in a film I have ever heard. In a so bad it's good kind of way, certainly. We assume he's dead. Boom, title. Kurt Angle, Psycho Sid, Anti-Flag, you know, like, your standard opening credit scene.
Hey.
But they're, like, welding during it.
Yeah, yeah, this is the factory, yeah, which is,
okay, so I was equally, so, like, I was saying I was confused for shock treatment, I was confused for this intro. I was like, wait, where are we now? Why?
We were just for the cleric, and now we're in a welding factory.
Is this the same time period? Like, are they down the street from each other? Like, that was where my mind was going.
These are the questions that could have been clarified with a date at the bottom of the screen during that last one.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
But I won't hold it against them too much. Like, the credits end, we meet Gunnar Seagram, played by James Storm from Impact Wrestling fame. He tells his boss that he has to his boss tells him that he has to work over the weekend. Seagram calls him a piece of shit. He leaves. Not much of substance in the scene, just a dude doing the relatable thing of hating on his jerk boss.
Heck yeah, sticking it to the man.
Yeah.
This is the guy with the half ponytail, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The luscious mane of locks that are half pulled back. Okay, I have a split problem in mind.
That's pretty much his in-ring look too, Cowboy James Storm.
Oh yeah, he's definitely like, he plays the good old Southern boy.
Yeah, absolutely. For this sure. was the role he was born to play.
Absolutely.
Right after this, we meet Clay Myers, played by former WWE star Kurt Angle, who at the time is also working for Impact Wrestling. He's driving down a country road. He's listening to Anti-Flag. Because I have to imagine that was totally in Anti-Flag's contract, just like peppered right. in, for sure. Anyway, like, Kurt, he sees a turtle. And he purposely runs it over, and I'm immediately pissed off with this movie.
Yes! And it's like the effect is like him running over a cherry pie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It like explodes, and it's so like graphic, and you're like, that poor turtle was fake, but didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Not one bit.
I always appreciate a good dummy death, but I don't know. A dummy death that is also an animal. Yeah, not a turtle, not an animal, like... Not a dude that was just crossing the road.
Yeah. And was this... Does he have the people in the back seat at this point?
Yes, he does. The passengers, okay. they're quite shocked at Clay Myers. Also, just a sidebar about like how I'm going to be reviewing this movie. I'm probably going to be bouncing between their character names and their wrestler names a whole bunch.
Sure.
And that's fine. No, I don't think I learned any of their characters.
No, I don't think I did either. That is perfectly fine.
Totally fair. Yeah, as you say, the passengers are in the backseat. They're not pleased with his actions, but Kurt takes him to a back dirt road, and he decides he wants a little thrill ride down what do they call it, Buffalo Bluff or something?
Oh boy.
We're from Southern California, not from the South, all right?
So there's no Buffalo Bluffs in no. California. Okay, no. good to know. Either way, like he decides he wants a little thrill ride. He rides down the overly steep hill and ends up crashing into a tree. He gets beckoned when he wakes up by the sound of that squealing hog from the prologue. I love that the villain is so far just a disembodied feral hog of sort.
I just need to say it now that the audio production on the film was just
we think that they might have been recording with like the boom mic that attaches to your handheld camera, because like the audio quality was questionable on this film.
It was like you heard so much atmosphere and so little dialogue.
Yeah. And as bad as it was in this scene, it gets so much worse later on. Like, there's so This movie is riddled with audio issues, but
yes.
All the same, like Kurt gets beckoned by that feral hog of sorts, and he finds this random hatch just by the tree that he conveniently crashed in. Inside, he finds one of those medallions, and he puts it on, and he also finds a tablet, which he reads, and he starts coughing.
He's fluent in the language of the tablet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the whatever language it is, it just possesses him. He coughs, he passes out, and when he wakes up, he has red eyes.
How did that, huh? Why? How did he get possessed? Was it just because he put the medallion on?
I think it was like a combination of the two. It's like the evil necklace and the evil tablet. It's doing one or the other. I think you're okay, but you do both and suddenly you're doomed to curse the earth.
They'd split them into two different holes in the ground.
Yeah, two different hatches.
Yeah.
And everybody would have been safe.
The movie, this would be the end credits and everyone would go home happy.
They'd be like, wow, that was a great 10-minute short.
Yeah. So Kurt's friends, they wake up from the back seat. They approach him, saying, "Oh, you okay, man?" He says, "Yeah, I'm fine." Stabs them both in the hearts, like knives behind the back. Kind of a cool shot, I must admit that. Yeah, yes. and then he just kind of like stares awkwardly into the camera
with his red eyes.
With his red eyes, like as if he's as if I owe him money or something, and. Yeah.
Well, I thought it was interesting because I think I just was trying to figure out to what level he was possessed.
Sure.
Because it felt like he took those guys there knowing he was going to do a ritual in the woods.
And he needed two people to be with him.
Yeah.
Because the one guy was like, "I gotta go home."
Right, exactly. The one guy was like, "I'd rather not do this." And he was like, "Ha ha ha, fuck you anyway," and just did it and crashed the car and then was like, "Sayonara, sacrifice."
Yeah, yeah. But either way, we're introduced to the antagonist of the film, played by former WWE champion and former Olympic gold medalist, Kurt Angle. we cut back to James Storm. He's leaving the factory. He's clocking out. He's greeted by his friend Animal.
So he works at the factory?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. how the factory fits into this? Oh, okay.
We obviously followed this really well.
You know, it's all details. You gotta keep an eye, or otherwise you're gonna miss something, an important thing.
We'll keep going. There's other things.
Certainly. Yeah, anyway, like, he meets his friend outside. His name is Animal, who's played by Matt Morgan. And just to be clear, Animal is the character's name and Matt Morgan is the wrestler's name. It could go either way, certainly. I'm noticing that Seagram is wearing the same medallion for the first time, so that's will clearly come up. Animal bought a truck. Seagram is very happy for him. Seagram complains about his boss while they drive. Saying weekend plans are ruined, blah, 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 blah. And then they get pulled over by the fabled sheriff who shows up now.
Oh, yes. Okay, so
that guy.
You were just describing that whole last scene, and I was like, did that happen? When did that happen in the movie? When were they just like, but it's because that guy shows up.
Yes, exactly.
The guy that they probably spent most of their budget on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they couldn't afford a boom operators, because they got Tom Savini.
There's a lot this movie couldn't afford in regards to the effects department, and I can't wait to discuss those further. But I agree. The Savini budget was too much of the
too
budget.
Hefty.
Too
That's
hefty.
That's why he, spoiler alert, gets got.
Yeah,
but
when
we're
he
not
does.
There yet.
No. But while he's here, you know, he pulls them over. He's super homophobic at pretty much on every single line he delivers.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah. Animal's a bit of a hothead, but Seagram talks the sheriff out of giving them a ticket, and that's pretty much the end of the scene.
I know that it needs to have, I know they need Tom Savini there, but it also feels like they just wrote Tom Savini's character to be Tom Savini and be, like, the cameo actor that shows up. Because, like, this scene, it just didn't give me a whole lot of
I mean, I have to agree with you. I feel that's true for the rest of his scenes too. Like this movie this movie can move forward without Sheriff Tom Savini.
It's just so people can have the experience I was having of like, what is he in?
Yeah.
Oh, he's in 800 movies? Oh, that's why he's recognizable. Okay.
Yeah. After this one, we come to back to the crime scene where Kurt stabbed his friends. Investigators suggest that the boys here had a knife fight. But there's no knife to be found. Detectives find the tablet, but it doesn't possess them because, of course, they're not wearing the medallion. You know, they're only half possessed. Mm-hmm. Disappointing casual racism by the detectives, and that's the end of the scene.
Well, they also have comically large, like
just the one detective has like a very he has like a wide neck, so his collar like sticks out like all the way to his shoulders in every shirt that he wears.
Anytime he came on screen, I would just turn to everybody and put my hands next to my collarbones and just pretend those were my shirt collars. Because they're like, so wide. It's like his neck is too beefy. It can't be contained in the shirt.
It's like he's the narrator from Rocky Horror.
Exactly. He's the detective.
He's the criminologist.
Absolutely is the criminologist. Everything is Rocky Horror.
And he's the criminologist in both films now. It just all ties together. It's part of the expanded Rocky Horror universe.
There's more reasons in this movie that I think that, but we'll get to them.
Oh, please. I cannot wait. We cut to a fancy black car driving through town, heads up to the bar. Everyone notices the tall man walk in. He sits down, revealing himself as Psycho Sid, another great wrestler. And honestly, this whole segment could have been like straight off the page, straight off the screen of wrestling TV. That's how you introduce a character. It was brilliant. I loved it. He wants a beer. He wants a shot of vodka. His eyes are red too. He is pissed off.
He has the roided out looking Dr. Cox from Scrubs.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I cannot unsee that now. Psycho Sid is roided out Dr. Cox.
That was Kate. That might have been...
That was me. Yeah, absolutely. I looked at him and I was like, why does this guy look so familiar but unfamiliar? And I was like, his face looks like someone but not like someone. And I was like, he's super buff, roided out Dr. Cox. That's exactly who he is.
Well, Kate, thank you so much because this is my headcanon now. Like... This is Psycho Sid to me.
You're welcome.
His
day job is doctor.
Outside the bar, Seagram shows up with a new friend, not Animal. Seagram is pissed off because he sees that black car in the handicap spot, which is Sid's car. They head into the bar. The barman is actually his dad, so a little family connection there.
Okay.
Yeah, Seagram's mad at the factory. His dad blames foreigners for some reason. James Storm is like, no, Dad, that's not cool. And it just changed. Anyway, he spots Psycho Sid in the corner looking pissed off. Dad says he doesn't know him, but he's not friendly. Again, this movie just likes peppering in those like casually problematic things that really don't add to the script moving forward.
Well, okay, there... I was looking at everybody when we were watching this. I was like, there are parts of the script that are not terrible.
Yeah, I agree.
And like, I think they just threw way too many characters.
Yeah.
At the thing. And then they also, the cinematography just is so, it looks like it's shot for TV. And that's like the best compliment I could give it.
It's shot for YouTube.
Yeah.
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 And I'll agree with you because like there is some like, you know, more positive messaging and it's more so through the actions and words of the protagonist. So, you know, that's certainly worthwhile in that regard. But like to your point about like how it's filmed, this next scene, man, like this is like the weirdest editing choice I have ever seen. Like firstly, like we go right from this bar to this like campground scene, whatever the country mud show event is supposed to be.
That happened.
Yeah. Now, James.
Oh my gosh, I blocked that from my memory. Apparently,
it's worth blocking out. But honestly, these editing choices, I just couldn't get over. First, we go right from this bar to this place, and James Storm is now in his friend Animal's truck. He's in a completely different truck. Animal's also not with him. Also, he got out. When he drove in, he got out of the passenger side seat for some reason.
I just like the idea of him shimmying out. Like, he's like, no, I'm not going to get out of the driver's seat. And like crawls over the console.
And this is where I lose my shit, because they go right from this to a frigging stock footage of like this monster truck rally / country music video that's just thrown in.
And it's like, I love big trucks.
Big trucks are my favorite thing.
Yeah, I remember that.
I couldn't tell if it was satire or if it was an actually, like if the song was written for the movie and if it was a joke or if that is actually produced music.
Yeah, it was genuine. It was, I think just like paired up with the stock footage too. It just like really... completes this the idea that this director just didn't give a shit at this moment.
Ooh, I have to send you this Vice video that's on YouTube that this guy gets asked to be a journalist at a monster truck rally and take 2 tabs of LSD right before going.
Okay.
And he has the most interesting experience at this monster truck rally. So I was just thinking about that too. Like, this is such a weird, like, they're trying to appeal to such a mass audience of like
monster trucks
and wrestling and
look, or there's a cute girls here too,
I guess, is a good question to ask.
I don't know. Do wrestling fans like monster trucks too? Is it like car wrestling?
I mean, I never thought of it that way, but yes, it is kind of like car wrestling. There was in fact a fabled monster truck match between Hulk Hogan and the Giant that I suppose we're going to have to watch next time you're on the podcast.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Anyway, the music video itself ends, you know, James Storm is sitting there. He's waxing poetic about this beautiful night he's having. And then, like, somehow this scene becomes a mud wrestling scene between the two girls that they were hanging out with. Like, completing.
They just throw these girls into mud. And then they're like, oh, I guess we wrestle now.
Right? Yeah. Like, we've hit a real trifecta of, like, problematic shit of like, racism, homophobia, and now objectification within the first 30 minutes of the film. But frankly, like the it kind of tapers off, like all that stuff kind of like just disappears, and suddenly we really focus on the druids from here on out, more or less. Mm-hmm. Yeah, happy that all that stuff is in the rear view of the film. But we cut to Kurt Angle, who's at a new gas station. He's eyeballing 2 bikers. One is played by another wrestler, legendary hardcore wrestler Rhino. Kurt tries to steal one of their bikes. He fights them both off, but Rhino knocks him down with a piece of lumber. They think they've killed him, but he gets up.
This is such a good scene of,
it's like, so good.
This was when I was like, ah, this is a wrestling movie. They're doing like double team, throwing him back and forth.
Yeah.
Really fun camera work.
Yes.
If it had been more of that sort of stuff,
I would have liked it.
The movie would have been like, oh my gosh, so much better.
Yeah.
But the scene is so short. It, like, you're like, ah, yes, ah, it's over?
Yeah. It's funny, because, like, this scene, like, it's the first of, like, a, I don't know, like, more absurd cinematic elements, I think. Like, the blood splashing, like, directly onto the camera, which is, like...
Oh, I love it.
Such a departure from the conventions they've established in the film so far, but, like, I was still here for it. Like,
yeah,
fuck
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
right after this, the cops are investigating the dead bodies at the gas station. Not much is happening with these cop scenes, but now we see that Sid is watching them from a distance. So he's got eyes.
The detective, is he now wearing the white hat?
No, that's the next time he shows up.
Okay.
Because it's only at night.
Okay, that's right.
Oh, is there a fan theory about this
hat? At night.
Oh, okay. So he's like, okay, it's just his night hat.
It's his night hat, yeah.
Everyone has a night hat, of course.
But he also is wearing it with, like, a white jacket, so it's just so...
Miami, but also redneck Miami.
Redneck Miami. We cut to Seagram and his friend Speedy. They're fixing a car. Once again, Sheriff shows up. Doesn't add anything to the scene other than just accusing everyone of stealing, and but he doesn't actually do anything about it. He just blames people for shit and like doesn't follow up.
And then he's like, "Okay, bye."
Yeah, I'll let you off this time with a warning.
Again, for the second time in recent days.
A car shop. Or do they work at a metalworking factory?
Both.
I think he was just helping his friend Speedy out, but like, who's to say? Like, I guess he could be holding down several odd jobs. Why
it's
not?
Like a combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell.
You get your car detailed.
And also, you get your metal welded.
Yeah. You bring it in the backseat.
This seems perfect. I don't know why these businesses don't already exist. Then again, I know nothing about cars or metal work, so...
Same.
In regards to, like, being a wrestling film, this next scene was just, like, absolute fan service for the wrestling fans. It's another convenience store. The attendant working there is a lady named Marge, played by the wrestler ODB. She may be named Marge here, but she's just full ODB in the scene. Like, this is exactly her character in pro wrestling. Yeah. She has donuts for a regular named Frank. Frank suggests a menage a trois with his wife. she says to... You know, call her up and see what happens. But anyway, he leaves.
casually. Like, that's just...
Loved her.
She is fantastic. And again, like, this was ODB to a T in TNA / Impact Wrestling. Like, she's a strong woman, very confident in her, you know, very unique brand of sexuality. She does the whole BAM thing all the time. But this whole convenience store sequence could have been, like, straight off the screen of, like, an oddball wrestling segment. But there was also, like, this other random part, because we heard the evil pig again.
Yes.
But it wasn't an evil pig.
It was a man masturbating.
For no reason.
Just this whole scene, again, happened for no reason. Why did we go to the convenience shop? Why do we find out about the menage a trois? Why is the guy jerking off in the?
But it was like the hot rod. No, it was like a hot rod magazine.
Hey, this was not the venue for this gentleman to be doing what he was doing. But but I will certainly not kink shame him for enjoying hot rods. To each their own. Hey, different strokes.
Yeah, I'm not gonna yuck your yum. Okay.
We do lead to another death scene, though, because Frank leaves the store. He climbs into his truck. Kurt Angle is already in the passenger seat, startles Frank. Kurt knocks him out, then wakes him up again so he can run him over.
Yeah. That happened, too.
And
oh,
the
my
honk,
gosh.
The honk with, like, seven very loud honks.
That was, like, a triggering semi-truck honk.
It was very loud.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was aggressive.
That was where, like, that's a good horror device, like, plot device to, because I think that is an effective sense. Yes. Like, we all had a reaction to it.
Sure.
But then it was, like, so cheesy because then the guy just runs right in front of the semi and we're all, like, dive left.
Yeah.
Dive right. Just get out of the... oncoming car.
This was totally my, like, loud guy at the theater moment. I was shouting the same thing at my screen, like, go to the left, he can't turn that well. Like, come on.
Yeah, just run in the opposite
turn
direction.
The radius is too wide.
He should have just turned around, and then he would have been like, oh, fuck, how do I back up a semi? How do I reverse this?
Next up is actually a really cool scene, because we cut to James Storm. He's in his cabin. He's sleeping off a few beers, and he's having visions of those druids. This is a huge trope. He's having visions, and it's cutting back and forth really quickly between himself and all the druid shit he's seeing. But if you look closely, when it's cutting to him sleeping, you see a hand reaching towards his amulet. And when the vision stops, the hand is gone.
I have no memory of this.
Well, I thought it was a very cool detail, and I rewound it a couple times to rewatch it.
I have literally zero memory of this.
It was just, like, there were so many random things. Like, I was thinking about the convenience store. I was like, whoa, that guy was just jerking off in the middle of the convenience store.
I
wonder when we're
going
to come back to that.
Thankfully, we didn't. I'm so glad we didn't. Yeah, I like, it was just like, anyway, it was very subtle, and this movie so far has not been subtle, and I just like applauded that very understated
detail. I
wish detail.
I would have noticed that.
Well, hey, it's still free on YouTube if you're listening at home. Watch Death
you
from Above today.
You should do the movie by minute podcast on this movie.
For Death from Above, yeah.
If I am going to do a minute-by-minute podcast about a movie with a wrestler, I think it would have to be The Rundown with the Rock and Christopher Walken.
I love Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
I mean, how
so
can you
much.
Not? He is the
He's
best.
A true treasure.
Yes. What can he say except you're welcome?
Aww. flashing back to Moana now I want to do a minute by minute of Moana.
Yeah. Anything with Dwayne in it, we're in.
100%.
You could just do all of Dwayne's movies. That could be your movie by minute theme.
But you only have to refer to him as Dwayne The Rock Johnson. His full name.
Yeah.
His full legal name.
Yeah. Given by his mother.
Kate, Haley, I'm sorry, I'm like mentally going to check out now because I'm just going to be thinking about this Rock movie minute by minute podcast that I'm going to be doing after this.
You're welcome.
But
we won't take any royalties on that one.
But we do have something to bring me back into the film. It's the detectives, and I assume this is when the hat comes in.
Yes, definitely.
The night hat.
The night hat. They find Frank, poor trampled Frank. The cops are exchanging like the most random lines. They're saying like this feels evil and probably has something to do with the damn tablet. You know, cop stuff.
They're absolutely useless.
It's so
They're
great
doing
how useless they are
to like figure out the killer. They're not, and they prove to end up being useless. Anyway, we're seeing lots of evidence throughout their investigation that they're kind of just letting things unfold in front of them.
Absolutely.
And they're not really, like, actively trying to prevent.
And also, how many days does this span over? Because every time we cut to those detectives, they're wearing something different. So I'm like, does this take place over, like, a week? Is it, like, a couple days? Is he going on a killing spree and all of these people get killed in one day?
And they just keep having costume changes?
I mean,
because they need a new look every place.
I mean, Kurt Angle is like wearing the same shirt the entire movie, and
yeah, the same affliction tee. Yeah,
the same affliction tee. There should be scenes where he was just like pounding back Monster Energy drinks on top of the affliction shirt, like maybe some Ed Hardy merch as well.
Oh,
you know, like
the trucker hat
or the bedazzled jeans.
Ooh, yes,
yeah.
The key pockets, details. Key details were missing from the costume choices behind Kurt Angle, but we can't begrudge the costume department too much. The next scene, though, this is the scene we've been waiting for since the opening credits. Outside the bar venue, neon lights reading "Tonight Only," "Anti-Flag."
Wow!
Yes, it's here.
It's here. Now, I admit, I was hoping for full camp in this scene. I was hoping that they would swing for the fences and that not quite what happened, you know, like,
no.
We get Anti-Flag, they're on stage, they're playing. Backstage, there's like the, I don't know, the venue manager. He's with some girls who want to meet the band. He says we'll make it happen. He has an amulet too. Kurt shows up. He kills him. Not much interesting
but
exchange
he gets,
here.
Like, a really gruesome, like.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Okay.
Like sliced open, and I think there's like an effect that gets used because you see some like. Soup coming out, you know, like some chicken noodle.
He also gets his hand like obliterated, like Kurt Angle just crushes the hand, and the dude like he doesn't even whimper. Like, what a tough dude! I gotta give him that.
It's cocaine. He had the cocaine.
The cocaine. that makes sense to me. Absolutely.
Yep.
Either way, Kurt gets his amulet. Then he walks on stage while Anti-Flag's playing. Everyone goes silent because he's all covered in blood and all that. Then he just... again, I was really hoping for a different scene, but all we got was he holds up the amulet and shouts very gutturally. A few seconds pass, just insane shouts too, and then the crowd shouts too. Again, I like Anti-Flag, but I was really hoping... for a hokey Anti-Flag murder in this scene, and I was very disappointed.
And it didn't
Why
happen.
Why didn't that exactly? That would have been a much better use of this cameo of this band, and like, it was so strange how it ends because then you're like, oh, no one finds the body of the manager. No one like freaks out. You don't hear a girl scream. You don't.
No.
He just, like, leaves the venue, and everyone's like, yeah, metal, ah.
Yeah.
I mean, punk, but we'll let it slide this time.
Yeah.
It would have been great if he, like, murdered Anti-Flag and then, like, got into his truck and listened to more Anti-Flag. That's what I would have done, but...
Well, maybe that's why he didn't kill the band, is that they're actually
his
favorite.
Yeah.
So he couldn't.
I like that. I would subscribe to that canon. Absolutely. Next scene, longer than it really needs to be. All they really establish is that Seagram has a crazy uncle named Leonard, and that one of Seagram's friends is going to help him with his spiritual dreams.
And aliens, I guess.
Well, the aliens come a little bit later. Wait, do they talk
Okay.
Do they talk about aliens in this scene? Maybe I'm mistaken.
I'm not sure.
I just know that it's the uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're more prevalent later on when we finally meet Leonard. But before then, we actually meet someone else. We go to Speedy's garage, and a woman in a classic white car giving
That's
off this full
right.
white witch energy, Consuela. She has a Ouija board, and this made me laugh, him calling it an orgy board. I laughed like an immature 13-year-old. I admit this. She tries to like focus on the connection of what's haunting James Storm. A connection breaks with a record scratch sound effect because they were all staring at her boobs. And then she gets back on track. This whole scene really didn't really need to happen as it did, but she makes the connection. The Ouija board starts spelling things out with the worst stopmation I've ever seen, and I must respect it.
And they don't, that's not how you use a Ouija board either. I thought that they would all, like the point is that
you touch it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Instead,
but
it was this funny stop motion effect that I appreciated on one level, but then was like, why?
Yeah. Yeah, why? Why? Why was me for a lot of the scenes? Why?
Yes.
And also, Consuela was a questionable choice of an actress. She, you know.
Are you really going to talk about the acting right now?
Yes, I am. Because honestly, I'll forgive the rest of the actors in this film.
Because they're wrestlers?
Well, because they like, as questionable as some of the script was, the acting was not terrible. They delivered. They can only deliver so much on a bad script.
That's fair. Are you saying that Consuela had a better script to work with and it didn't quite work out?
I'm saying that, you know.
Did the scene need to happen?
Yeah, choices were made. I don't know if they were good ones or bad ones, but they were made, and I don't feel it was necessary. It's fine. It's fine.
Because then what was the point of the Ouija board contact?
Well, she makes the connection, realize that like it spells out the name Thule, which causes her to freak out. She realizes it's an ancient one that's chasing James Storm, and she freaks out and drives, you know, the hell away. So it establishes even further that this man who is we've already seen kill, like, several people, it establishes that he might be bad news.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Either
Jury's
way.
Still out. We'll see.
Maybe we'll figure it out in this next scene, but we get a little more bad editing because we just, like, cut to a whole bunch of contemporary druids. Like, up until now, we didn't know that druids were still running around this town, but apparently they are. You know, they're getting ready to do a virgin sacrifice while a weird old dude is
That's right.
Yeah, he's got another medallion and he's giving a sermon on power and whatnot. But then Kurt shows up and he demands the amulet, the medallion. He IDs himself as their god from the dark place. This is where I noticed some really terrible audio editing. Like, they were not even in the same studio or room. Like, it was just all over the place. The levels were terrible. But either way, the sermon dude, he rejects him as the god, but Kurt Angle kills him, steals the rune, and the druids bow down to their new god. Yeah. As a mutiny works. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. But again, not really much of substance beyond that, other than Kurt's getting all of his medallions, and it sounds like he just needs one more, which of course would be Segrim's. Another quick cop scene, accomplishing very little as they all do, other than they're going to send the tablet to some university professors. This is all mostly done. Yeah, I think they only cut to that so they could cut to Kurt traveling to another from this sacrifice zone to another spot. Not that, like,
you
editing...
You have two back-to-back scenes.
Well, like, that's the funny thing. They weren't concerned about this editing before with, like, James Storm going from bar to country mud show, whatever. Yes. But now they're worried about details because he's driving around in the truck. He gets pulled over by the sheriff.
But in the truck, he's listening to, like, I'm gonna take my bat and kill you. And we were trying to figure out if it was a real song or not, because it was just like, I'm gonna kill you.
I'm gonna take you to the forest and kill you. Yeah. The lyrics, I think.
You know, you've raised several good points about the soundtrack. I think I need to, like, look through to see if it's all satire or... I don't know. I think they blew their budget.
I'm a little concerned.
Yeah, who's writing this song?
Anti-Flag.
They furnished the whole soundtrack.
Including the big truck song.
Either way, like, they go to, the sheriff approaches the truck, he tries to see the license and registration, but Kurt's not in the truck, he's disappeared. Sheriff walks around the truck, like, three frigging times in this scene. It goes on way too long, until he realizes that Kurt's in his sheriff truck, or cop car, whatever you want to call it, and runs over the sheriff, and the sheriff is done with.
And that's when they ran out of their Tom Savini budget.
Yeah, that's when the Tom Savini budget was completely tapped.
Yeah, they were like, I know we needed you for some point for this movie, because we needed a police officer, I guess. But okay, here's why I'm confused. Because then we have the detectives that are actually, like, studying the crime that's occurring.
Are they?
Well, I mean, we
for all intents and purposes, they are.
We see them at the crime scenes a lot.
There you go.
But, like, we never see them with Tom Savini, and they never are, like, working together.
Essentially,
one's
like
a sheriff, one's a detective.
But, like, this just, like, drives the point home that the Savini character was completely redundant to the plot. He could have been one of the detectives, and I think you know. Casting problem solved.
No, that's why they were like, we only have enough to get him halfway through the movie and then do a gruesome off-screen kill.
That's true. And they needed both detectives for the rest of the movie, maybe.
Exactly.
Maybe.
But we do cut to...
see, how interesting would it be if he had been, like, the original detective, right? And then, what's his name? Angle?
Yeah, Kurt Angle.
Stone Angle?
Stone. Kurt Angle. Collecting the stones.
Yes, there you go. If he had found the detective and then killed the detective halfway through his investigation, and then these new detectives had to show up and were like, well, shoot, now we have to, like, figure out what's going on because the last guy got.
And he didn't take any notes.
Well, he had a mustache, okay? He didn't think he needed to take notes.
Something. I buy into that. I think that's how we... Oh, you know what? We just mentioned that Savini and the detectives don't share a scene, but the detectives did just discover Savini's body, so... This is where they got to rub shoulders. But once again, nothing's established. We cut away from them. We're back at James Storm's cottage. He's watching a VHS tape of his crazy Uncle Leonard, as we all have.
In 2012?
Yeah, yeah. We all just have tapes of our crazy uncles lying around. You know, Leonard is, like, hitting all the marks of, like, crazy uncle trope for film. He's citing mind control, alien agenda, New World Order, Underworld Guards. You know, finally someone's making sense in this movie. But
I mean, like, at this point I was like, oh, okay. Then I kind of, if the movie's all over the place and they're gonna, like...
do an alien reveal.
Like, I'm kind of buying, I'm getting into this. Okay.
Yeah.
Because also, the... this is where I'm like, the script isn't terrible, because that character is quite well written. I can believe that character exists.
Yeah.
Really relates to the crazy uncle.
I may have turned to Katie and said, he might have a point. And then he started going on about New World Order, and I went, never mind.
It's like, hold.
Check that statement.
It's like, hold on, let him finish, let him finish. I want to hear what he has to say.
Exactly. Don't judge the man yet. Let him finish his statement.
But he ends his diatribe with a reference to Thule once again. So that's popping up in James Storm's world a whole bunch. He goes off to find Uncle Leonard when he meets him and his fellow recluse pal. They share a cold one. James Storm confides about his crazy dreams, and Leonard says he's given up on the whole demon concern, and now he's worried about chemtrails.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we're really just ping-ponging between all the crazy shit.
Widening the lasso. They're like, what else can we maybe toss in here?
Leonard, you know, he tells them all about the runes and how there were four. The House Storms is the Earth rune. You know, just a lot of foreboding shit. If Thule gets all four, there's going to be a plague on the Earth for 1,000 years. Another scene that's just kind of like way too long at this juncture. This could have been like much shorter. And it could have been a lot shorter if James Storm didn't literally ask the question, what are you talking about? Three lines in a row.
Oh my gosh.
He's like a 5-year-old who's just like not listening to a word you're saying and just but repeats this question over and over again.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Anyway, like, Leonard says, like, he can't help him, he's too old.
Me too, man, me too.
Yeah, again, like, once again, Leonard's just making all kinds of sense.
So wait, this is the same person, though, that was on the VHS tape?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. He's a little more...
like, he was not as crazy.
He's too old to be crazy now.
He's chilled out a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
He had his young, crazy hippie days, and then... now he's just so reserved. It was so different from who we'd seen on the TV that I was like, is this even the same character? I'm confused.
He's reined in the craziness over the years, certainly.
Yeah.
What I find funny, though, is like James Storm literally drives off after having like Leonard reject offering to help. The moment he's gone, Leonard's friend asks him like, hey, maybe you should help him. And Leonard's like, yeah, I should. Go get the shotguns. Like, that was the pace the previous scene should have been. Like, boom, boom, done. Move on.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I love, like, those 180 pivot points by characters. Like, especially if they happen in the same scene. Like, that's, That's a.
I absolutely cannot help you. Maybe you should help him. I'm gonna help you.
Oh, man. Detectives are on the phone with the university professors. They say the tablet's in Celtic. They establish that Seagram will have to give the Earth Rune away. He can't just be killed and have it taken from him. So there's an obstacle in Thule's path. We cut to Kurt and James Storm having a chance meeting at an intersection leading to a foot-slash-truck chase. Once again, that heavy metal is playing. Like, I'm gonna kill you! Like,
yeah.
A lot of fun in this soundtrack. Anyway, Kurt Angle's hanging off of the truck. James Storm jumps out of it while the truck just, like, drives off into the distance in the dark. And, you know, we assume never to be seen again? I don't know. But then we cut to Speedy's garage. Storm's other friend, who's also still not Animal from, you know, Matt Morgan. He calls Speedy, he saw Seagram in trouble. They consider what they're going to do, and they say, okay, yeah, let's go help. I have an idea. Cut back to Storm. Sorry, at this point the movie's just like spitting back and forth between all these scenes, and not many of them have substance worth us like jumping into.
So many characters that they're like, so many characters. Need to check up on all of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when I was like, maybe Zach chose this movie for us on purpose.
You know, I'm seeing the parallels, but go on.
This is more Rocky Horror than I initially was prepared to realize.
Honestly, like, I see the parallels that you're referring to, like this chaos that just doesn't really make sense. Mm-hmm. But again, I didn't see this movie before I sent it to you. I had no idea what either of us were going to be in for, and I'm glad that it ended up being
such
like this.
Treat.
Yeah, this treat. either way, like, you know, we cut to Storm, you know, now he's walking around and he's surrounded by all the druids who have just popped up. And Kurt's brandishing that threatening knife again, and he demands the rune. Storm says no. Kurt says, let's rule the world together. James says he owes it to his ancestors to say no. Where the hell did that plot element come from? But okay.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, because he said that the amulet had been passed down in the men of his family or something like that. I remember him saying something like that earlier in the film, but like very briefly. And I was like, okay. And then like, he's like, my ancestors. And I'm like, but you didn't know anything about this group before.
Well, it was just like, what's his name again? Stone?
Kurt Angle? What is
no,
wrong?
The other one.
James Storm.
Storm. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
His character, too, I was like, why does he even exist? Like, he has to be a final obstacle, I guess, for Thule.
Yeah, so like, he's not. He's barely even a protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Either way, like, Storm decides he's going to fight them off. He fights off the druids. I think he fights off, like, three of them before Kurt Angle hits him with a running elbow. Again, and a couple nice elements of fan service wrestling moves, including that elbow there. Big back body drop. Really, this was a fun action sequence, I'll say. But, mm-hmm. like, it's a beautiful precursor to the action sequences that we're about to discuss. Brace yourselves.
I'm ready.
So, knife to throat. James Storm will not give up the rune. But that's when Speedy and his assistant show up in the monster truck. The druids all scatter. From the opposite flank, Leonard has shown up with his shotguns, and they start blowing away druids.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Everyone comes in for the final battle.
Everyone except that Matt Morgan animal, the guy who bought the truck in the beginning, and he's like the... And he was the only, like, one who looked physically capable of any kind of, like, violence aside from shotgun stuff. But either way, he's gone. But we have Leonard to save the day. Speedy, oh my god, when he's chasing down the druids and they run into the trailer. So he runs over the trailer with the monster.
Oh my gosh, and it's like a miniature of the trailer just so that he... That's not a real size trailer that monster truck...
I don't believe so.
Was it?
No.
No, it was comical, but it was like... Ha ha ha, they think they're getting away.
Please,
we're just going to crush them.
Please take the floor for another few minutes because I'm laughing reliving that moment.
Because it's just like, It looks like a toy truck. It mm-hmm. looks like a toy monster truck.
Oh. And it's like...
It just goes, crunch, crunch, crunch. Yeah. crunch. That's what, like, the truck is doing in my mind in that frame.
This whole sequence was so awesome. And even if the movie was, like, uneven at certain elements, like, it made it all worth it right here. Kurt once again has the knife to James Storm's throat. Speedy has an assistant approach Thule from the monster truck. The assistant says, like, you know, he's going to kill Seagram if he, you know, but he doesn't really seem very concerned when he delivers the line. Either way, Speedy, you know, he gets out to talk to them. Speedy tries to tell Seagram, just give him the necklace, you know, live your life. Seagram says, they can't, my ancestors, no.
And also, you know, a thousand-year plague.
And the thousand-year plague, certainly. But, you know, Speedy's not privy to this just yet. And anyway, we start hearing some haunting bagpipes. and we, all the characters look to their left, and we reveal fucking Psycho Sid again. Leonard... Yeah, I was so pumped for this. Like, the music, the slow turn that everyone had towards him. Leonard identifies Sid as Herzog, the justice, the equalizer from the other world. Herzog just storms in. He confronts Thule. Go back to the underworld where you belong. Thule says, no, I've come too far. And then, like, again, it could have been a wrestling match. It could have been a fight of epic proportions, yeah. But
he strangles him. He just picks him up.
Yeah.
Chokes him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my Speaks gosh, a little... but then, it's like, what the fuck did he not, what did he get out of his mouth?
Yeah, he pulled like a little, like, naked mole rat out of his throat.
It also looked like a lizard and a fish.
Yeah. It was like it was like part hog, part tadpole.
So creepy and, like, ridiculous and, again, a good, like... use in a horror of a plot device in a horror movie. Like, I was squicked out. I was uncomfortable thinking that there's this, like, teeny little lizard thing that's, like, that was controlling him. But then you get, like, the double whammy of the detectives arriving on the scene and being like, there's the man that we've been looking for. Pew pew.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was so funny. Like, they take him away. They think Kurt Angle's dead, but he's not dead. He wakes up. He's confused. And yeah, they just mow him down full on. Just, like, level him. At first, I was like, that's what I said. Like, at first, like, oh, he didn't deserve to die. He didn't really do all those killings. But then I remembered the turtle. And then I was suddenly cool. Ooh. And then the cherry pie. But I do want to, like, go back to the hog tadpole just for one second. The fact that, like, they couldn't even be bothered to fucking animate the thing. They didn't make it a practical effect. It couldn't even wiggle. It's just, like, a little piece of rubber lying on the beach. Or not the beach, but the stones or the gravel.
I hated it, though. It was so creepy. And, like, and he just, Dr. Cox.
Yeah.
That's Psycho Sid, right? Okay. Psycho Sid. He just picks it up and, like, puts it in his pocket, right, and walks away, and that's the end.
Yeah, that's the end of Thule and Herzog.
Well, it's okay. Speaking of everything is Rocky Horror. Like,
yes.
He came out of nowhere to control the this evil that just keeps affecting these humans that have no choice on the effect that they're receiving. Oh my gosh. And then he shows up and it's like Riff Raff shooting Frankenfurter. And it kind of just ends and you're like, wait, where did that guy come from? Oh yeah, he was at the beginning of the movie, but like, I haven't seen him following him. Well, we saw him a little bit in the detective scenes, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like you think he's worse news than he is, but he's just kind of lurking in the shadows and waiting for his moment to fix the wrongs. Again, like when I joined you on Time Warp Radio, like I revel in the fact that Rocky Horror doesn't really have meaning. Like I subscribe to that notion of the film. And like you just said, like that's kind of what I'm taking away from the movie at this stage.
is that this movie was meaningless.
Very much so, in the best possible way. Very last scene before the credits, the James Storm and the old folks, they're laughing, saying they're gonna go get a beer. Oh, maybe, Leonard, you're not that crazy after all. And they all have a big laugh, and then the end credits start. Like, oh, magnifique.
That's it?
All in all, what did you think of this masterpiece, Death from Above 2012?
Probably my new favorite movie.
There were parts of it that really made me think of one of my favorite movies. It's called The Theta Girl. And I'm going to send you a YouTube, the trailer for it, because when you watch the trailer, you'll get where I'm coming from, because it's also like, what the heck is going on? And also there's like band sequences and stuff and the way it's shot. So I was kind of in, I always try to be a fan of the movie until it like convinces me otherwise.
Okay. I like that.
And I didn't hate it. If I'm talking about it right now, I enjoyed it more than, like, The Avengers. Do you know what I mean? Like, other movies that I don't even care to discuss.
Sure.
It had points to it that were interesting and could be interpreted, because clearly they had some wild concepts that they tossed in like it was random, but maybe it wasn't so random because they don't exactly explain this evil that happens either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And I like what you said at the beginning of philosophy of liking a movie until it gives you a reason not to.
Yes.
I like that. That's a good philosophy. I like it.
Yeah, I start at like a 10. If it's a movie that I know I'm going to like, I'm like, okay, right away, it's going to be a 10 out of 10. I'm going to love it. And then like every time in my head, I mentally go, boo. I'd knock a point off.
I agree, like, with your reviews. A lot of what you said resonated. Is for me, like, this was uneven in the best possible way. A lot of like the so bad it's good flicks I know and love are already like, they're from another era, and it's so rare that I find one that's as contemporary as this one was, which was interesting.
Yeah.
I'm happy I watched it, and I'm, like, eager to, you know, like, the world to go back to making some sort of sense, and I can watch it in company with people over a couple beers or something.
Yes, absolutely.
Ooh, yeah.
But my last thought was this. While that priest, in the very first scene, he was only in the one scene, but he was killed looking straight up, which I think means he's the title character of Death from Above.
Ooh. Ooh, or in Haley's point of view, that shot of him, the angle of that shot of him, also means that he is also Frankenfurter. Because she tried to argue that Dr. Scott, because there's the same scene of Dr. Scott being shot from above,
but, okay,
and Frankenfurter being shot from above. So now this druid gets shot from above. He is also Frankenfurter.
Here is my Frank and Dr. Scott theory, okay? Because that was also part of why we did the podcast, was I was like, how wild does Rocky Horror get? Like, what is the wildest plausible plot that I could come up with out of that? What is there in the material? And I will say there is some compelling evidence that Dr. Scott and Frankenfurter might be the same person, because you're only getting the Denton Affair statements, so you're only getting what happened out of Brad, Janet, and Dr. Scott's perspectives, and it is called the Denton Affair, and the people involved are two former high school students with their former high school teacher. Sounds like an affair to me. And I'm just saying, if Dr. Scott had a weird sex orgy club in the middle of nowhere, and Brad and Janet accidentally showed up on the night that they were like, oh, we're gonna tell him that we're engaged, but it happened to be the weird sex orgy night that he'd been planning for months. And that's why the plot falls apart when Dr. Scott and Frankenfurter meet. And then we get the same camera angle of Frank in the pool when he's saying, don't dream it, be it. We get a reverse of that shot when Dr. Scott is in the rubble after superheroes, looking up at blue skies.
Huh. As always, whenever I talk with you both, I just end up wanting to watch Rocky Horror, and here I am in that very same position all over again.
Well, now you need to watch Shock Treatment, too.
Now I need to watch Shock Treatment, absolutely.
Yes.
It's a great double feature.
It is a great double feature, and we need you on our new season to talk about Shock Treatment.
Yes.
Say the word. I will be there, absolutely, with bells on.
The word. I'm saying it now.
The word. Okay. Katie, Haley, thank you so much. Always, always so much fun to speak with you both. Before I let you go, please let the audience know where we can follow you on social media. Then also, of course, where we can listen to Time Warp Radio and the upcoming Shock Treat Minute.
Wow. Well, we're on Instagram at Time Warp Radio.
And at Shock Treat Minute.
Yes. Our podcast is available anywhere you can listen to your favorite podcasts. And they're on two separate feeds because we wanted to keep Rocky Horror in its own
capsule.
Yeah, and if we ever need to go back to it, if we want to add more bonus episodes in the future, we can. But that way, Shock Treatment and our future seasons can kind of live on in a cult film genre.
Yes.
So, yeah, two different feeds, but we link to them in the episodes. If you listen to one of them, you'll find the other somehow.
Beautiful. Once again, thank you so much.
Thank you. Seriously, every time is the best time, and we just laugh our butts off. So.
Much fun. I need to come up with like a brand new format of the show just so I can like have you on a lot more regularly. Just like.
Hey, you know we're in. Your Dwayne the Rock movie by minute series.
I think you mean our Dwayne the Rock Johnson minute by minute series. Hey. But that's down the road.
Two finger guns?
We're pitching it right now.
I just listened to the intro from Shock Treat Minute for that secret shout out that they referred to me, and I just laughed for the 100th time tonight, rounding down. Katie, Haley, thank you so much for the shout out. And listeners, you'll be able to listen for that shout out on April 28th when Time Warp Radio presents Shock Treat Minute debuts. Check that out. And if you're a Rocky fan, please go back and listen to Time Warp Radio, minute by minute Rocky Horror podcast. Brilliant deep dive into the movie. And I'm so confident in saying that Shock Treat Minute will be just as good with Katie and Haley at the helm. It's going to be a great show. If you like this episode of Smark and Friends, I have two other episodes I really want you to listen to, both from October of last year. The first one, of course, had Haley and Katie as we did a wrestling watch-along of the death match between Vampiro and Pentagon Jr. Episode is called Torcha Torcha Torch Me. The other one was another film review of far more disappointing Kurt Angle horror movie. Pro wrestler and graphic novelist Bob Animal Anger joined me to review River of Darkness. Episode's called The River Was Dull, But We Watched It. Again, the film may have been disappointing, but a conversation with Animal never is. Always a great time talking to Bob Animal. Very dynamic dude. If you like what you just heard on today's podcast or the episodes I just mentioned, head on over to ratethispodcast.com/smarkandfriends. Leave us a kind word or two. Like and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at smarkandfriends. And of course, like the Two Finger Guns Club on Facebook. Thanks for joining me along with the good people at Time Warp Radio. We're going to be back next week. Till then, friends.
This has been a Two Finger Guns Club production. Pew, pew.